This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. On January 21st, 1992, Bill Cowher becomes the 15th coach in Steelers history when he was hired to replace Chuck Knoll as the second man to hold that job since the 1970 NFL-AFL merger. We just saw Coach Cowher receive his gold jacket a few days ago and officially be enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. This week's guest has his ties back to Cowher's first draft class back in 1992, as he was taken in the seventh round by the Pittsburgh Steelers. His name is Scotty Graham.
Welcome to the Football History Dude Podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. Your host is Arnie Chapman. Football is his passion, and he wants you to come along with him to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board his DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour. Great Scott.
This time, as we stop up the DeLorean, the date is February 5th, 2006, and we are in Detroit, Michigan. We're standing in the sidelines and Ford Field near the end of the game. This game, it happened to be Super Bowl 40, the Pittsburgh Steelers versus the Seattle Seahawks. This is Bill Cowher's Steelers, and they defeated the Seahawks 21-10. Even though this game was the pinnacle for Cowher, and he drafted this week's guest in his first draft in the seventh round, that's not why I bring this up. If you've listened to the show at all, you probably know that I'm a Detroit Lions fan, and considering the history of the team throughout the entire Super Bowl era, having a game in the stadium might be the closest thing that my team has to getting associated with the big game. I mean, they had one more, but that was back when it was the Pontiac Silverdome, back in Super Bowl 16. So, before I was born. If you have a soul, just let me have this one for a minute. And speaking of a soul, that's where I bring in this week's guest, Scotty Graham. You're going to hear in this interview that he is a very kind soul, and he was put on this earth to make those around him better. He has a genuine care for other people's success, and I'm very thankful for Scotty for taking time out of his coaching days to come over here, hop on the show. Now, Scotty Graham is a former NFL running back for the Jets and Bengals, but in the middle is where he made his hay, his biggest impact, if you will, in the NFL. He played with the Minnesota Vikings from 1993 to 1996. Again, he was drafted back in 1992 by the Steelers out of the Ohio State University. Yeah, we'll hear Scotty get all over this Michigander about how to say that whole university thing right, but we'll get into that later in the episode. Now, after the league, after his NFL playing days, his communication skills and ability to form relationships scored him a gig with the NFLPA and Gene Upshaw, a legendary Gene Upshaw for quite some time. Then he transitioned into an administrative role in the athletic department for the Arizona State University. Now, Scotty is in the process, well, beyond the process, they're already about ripping and roaring, and the transition into a new role as a running back coach for the University of Arizona. And everything that I've seen, as far as his former players and coaches and other people that have worked with him, there's no doubt that he will succeed. And speaking of succeeding, his days, he played with the likes of Warren Moon, Chris Carter. I mean, that's a Hall of Fame duo, passer to receiver and making a lot of points if you're in a fantasy football team, which is a good time for me to talk about fantasy football and an affiliate offer that we have for you to check into. We partnered with the Fantasy Footballers in their Ultimate Draft Kit. Now, this is like the secret weapon. If you've ever been in fantasy football and you're not maybe the best at drafting, or you are and you just need that extra edge, this is the draft kit to help you dominate your league. Like I said, this is an affiliate link, and any purchase that you make through this link that I'll provide you does earn us a commission at the Sports History Network and helps support the production of this podcast and the other great shows that we have over here on the Sports History Network. So if you're interested in checking that out, and more importantly, dominating your draft this year, the quick link is sportshistorynetwork.com/UDK, as in Ultimate Draft Kit. Again, go check it out right now at sportshistorynetwork.com/UDK. With that, let's get into the interview with Scotty Graham.
So I just want to start off with like a little bit of a
timeline. So let's go back to fresh out of Long Beach High School. I saw that you called it Strong Beach. You might have to tell me what that all means. Going into Ohio State University, let's kind of go talk about what that experience was like there for a little bit.
Grew up in Long Beach, one of the best places in the world. In New York, it's on Long Island. When you say Long Beach, people think it's Long Beach, California, this unique little town on the southern shore of Long Island. Learned a lot, cultural. I mean, it's one of the best places in the world to actually go to school, I think, because of the cultural aspect. And, you know, just it was so integrated. It was so many different people. So I got a chance to know what gefilte fish is, matzo brei, it's manigotes, Italian. I know what a knish is. People, I mean, going to Midwest, people had no idea of really culture because it's not really blended like that. So growing up on Long Island, it was really blended. You had rich, you had poor kids. You had multi-million dollar kids that went to my high school.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I grew up in the Midwest, like you said, and not as much of a culture. I'm in my day job. That's part of my territory is over in the city and everything. So I get a little bit more of an experience from there. And then you moved on to Ohio State. So I'm from Michigan. I mean, I don't really follow college as much, but let's just say there's not a lot of nice things that go your way as far as your alma mater. I mean, what was it like going on to a big program like that?
I had no idea what I was getting into. I had no idea. I'm just thinking I'm going to play football and I'm going to beat some kids out and be better than them. I had no idea what Ohio State was. And I didn't really understand it until probably after I played in the NFL and I went back to a game and realized how much is going on and how big the game is. And by the way, I won't hold it against you. It's called The Ohio State University. Let me
grab one. You know what? I think I might have even put that on there too.
See, we say The Ohio State University because it says The Ohio State University.
See, he even got it for those people that can't see this. He's got the diploma and it says The Ohio State University. We'll have some choice words off air for that. We won't talk about that right now.
I'm just putting it back. I'll be right back. Right here. I'm putting it back where it belongs.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, I saw it. So it looked like you had some success there, of course, and then you moved in the NFL. So this show covers more the history of the game, but we're going to get into your entire kind of career path there. At the NFL level, I mean, you play with some legends and Hall of Famers, and we talk about a lot of these types of players on this show. We've got the John Randalls, Chris Carters, Warren Moons. I could keep going on and on and on and everything. It takes more than just a few players to have a team. What about 53 players active on a roster? Like, share a story for me from camp or practice or something that you really cherish from playing on the field with the team.
The camaraderie. You're talking about you have 53 to 60 grown men with responsibilities working on one thing. That's why football is the ultimate team sport. Usually one player in football will not make a difference. As good as Barry Sanders was, he might be the best running back that ever played the game. But, you know, he never won a championship. And if you look at Emmitt Smith, as good as he was playing on a championship caliber team, made a big difference. I mean, who knows if Randy Moss would have been Randy Moss if he didn't come play with Chris Carter and the quarterbacks he played. I mean, there's some talented people that are not successful because they're not in the right places. And just being around the guys with that common goal is pretty daggone cool. And learning. You said Warren Moon and Chris Carter, those are two of my best friends. And when I got this job as the running back coach at the University of Arizona, they both were like, oh, Scott, you're going to do great. You're amazing. You're going to have a blast. So I got a lot of teammates I learned from. Rob Woodson was my teammate in Pittsburgh. Damani Dawson. So I have about, we can count them. Let me see. Randy Moss is in the Hall of Fame. Warren Moon's in the Hall of Fame. Chris Dolman's in the Hall of Fame. Let me think. Damani Dawson, Rob Woodson, Ronnie Lott was my teammate with the Jets. He's in the Hall of Fame. I got about, six or seven guys that I played with that are friends that are still my friends in the Hall of Fame. Eric Dickerson, I didn't play with him, but he's a great friend. We talk all the time. It's just unique, the relationships you build. I mean, you're talking about you're playing a game of, fifth and sixth and junior high school players and getting paid like a corporate executive. And it's unique to see the different people in the locker room because you have guys with different educational backgrounds and guys with PhDs. We had a couple of lawyers. Tim Irwin was a lawyer, while we were playing. I mean, so I had a unique opportunity to play with Jim McMahon. So surprisingly, he's not in the Hall of Fame yet, but Jim was incredible. I saw Jim about a year and a half ago because he lives in Phoenix, and we just laughed, and he hugged me, and he just laughed and said, Scotty G. John Salisbury, I talked to all the time. I talked to Robert Smith the other day. So just that camaraderie and being around the guys every day makes a big, big difference.
Yeah, I mean, I never had the right to serve in the military, but it's the closest thing I could probably consider that camaraderie that they have in the military on the gridiron. And I never made it to any higher levels. It was high school is the highest I made, but there's definitely that going to battle with your team in the trenches, two-a-days and all these types of things, something that you can't really get from the other sports that I've played in. I can't speak for other sports that are out there and everything. I mean, speaking of sports and being on the gridiron, I mean, I always remember the coaches that I had. I mean, you had this one time I saw, okay, so Tony Dungy, Brian Billick, and Dennis Green on the same coaching staff at the same time. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, don't leave out Willie Shaw.
Okay.
Chris Forrester was on that staff. There's so many great coaches on that staff. Tyron Willingham, who became a coach at Stanford, first black coach at Notre Dame, was at Washington. So, I mean, there were some tremendous coaches on that staff. Just some great men to be around. And, you know, Coach Green, you mentioned that. He's an amazing man. He and Tyron Willingham. Coach Willingham and I talk still. He's excited about me coaching running backs. And I told him I sound like him, and he just laughs. I've had many people impact my life. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Bobby Turner. He's a running back coach at the 49ers. He's my running back coach in college. He made a big difference. He made me believe I could actually play in the NFL. So that made a big difference in my life. Being in my sophomore year, he goes, "You can play in the NFL." I'm like, "Wow, really?" I goes, "Yeah, it's okay." So being able to get that dream at an early age and knowing you on the right track, that was pretty daggone cool. Playing with Coach Dungy, man, he was so humble. I mean, just one of the most amazing people you ever want to meet in your life. I mean, just wow. I mean, just amazing. Yeah, it's about people and relationships you build. At the end of the day, I mean, you may make millions of dollars, but it's the people you affect in life and people that affect you makes a big difference in your style of life. Even just now being here just at University of Arizona, being around Coach Fish and Coach Carroll and Jordan Pow and Deron Montgomery. We got some incredible Chuck Cecil, played in the NFL. Ricky Hundley, who was like a number six draft pick, played for the Denver Broncos. So, you know, it's just like being in a locker room, you know, it's team. Everybody has their part, and people play their part, and you're ready to roll. And nothing about football, you can't cheat it. If you're not contributing to the bottom line, you're probably not going to be here very long. It's a test every week. So that's – maybe you call it an adrenaline junkie for dealing with pressure. But – and I guess that's the common theme right now, pressure, put the quotes up. I mean, it's just a life you chose. So – and it comes with it.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned something going back. We'll rewind that. There's something about, you know, the talent in the NFL. There's talent everywhere, of course. So what do you think makes a good running back from a great running back besides talent on the field?
I'm a quote person, so you hear me quote all the time. Bobby Turner walked into our room, and he said, "I got 14 running backs, and I have one ball. Whoever controls the ego is going to play." And most people, what are you talking about? I mean, I was like, I understood it. It took a dose of humility. Every great player I know is tremendously arrogant. I mean, heavy dose of it, 95% of it, but about 50% humility. And they'll tell you about when they were humbled. From Randy Moss, Jake Reed, anybody I play with, they'll tell you the time where they were not happy with the way they were living. You know, Randy Moss was so good, it was actually scary. I mean, just unbelievable. 6'5", could run a 4-0 and just catch everything, track a ball. Just amazing. I'd never seen anything like that before in my life.
Yeah, it's just like you said. I've been fortunate enough to be to a couple of Hall of Fame ceremonies, and Randy Moss. You bring him up; he was there. It was the year with him and Ray Lewis, Brian Dawkins, some of my growing up players that I really cherish and everything, and the stories of what they've gone through.
It's amazing you mentioned these good men. Brian Dawkins and I are really good friends. We talk probably 3 or 4 times a year. We talked a little bit more when I worked for the NFLPA, but when I went obviously went into another career, it's just limited time and space where we see each other.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah. And we're going to get in just a little brief in NFLPA because I like your talk there. But first, so there's this thing that I don't know if you saw my cover. There's a DeLorean right here. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the premise of the show. You and I are going to go back in time. We're going to go on this DeLorean, take it 88 miles an hour. You can go back and relive one of your games, college or NFL. What game would you relive?
I guess my freshman year, last game of the year. We talk about this thing called integrity, and it's so subjective, and it's such a controlling word because people try to put their integrity on you, and if you don't do what they say you're going to do, then they say you don't have integrity. Well, wait a minute. If I asked you, do you have a dog, cat, or an animal?
Yep, we got a couple cats.
Okay. If somebody said, I'm going to kill your cat and add a Glock to it, would you kill a person?
Oof. Yeah, that's a tough question, man. This is you're going deep on a sports history podcast there, but no. And typically, I would say no.
Right, but if it was your child, what would you do?
Yeah, initially, you would have to say that I'm going to do whatever I have to do, so that doesn't happen.
But you just told me integrity. Well, I'm going to do that. Now I get to judge.
That's a tough one right there, man.
So people say, do you have integrity? I'm saying, it depends on circumstance. I'm not going to let you rob me and turn the other cheek. I mean, so no, we're not going to have that. So, you know, just integrity. And the reason I brought that up is because Earl Bruce, I learned what integrity was as an 18-year-old. They basically wanted to get rid of Earl Bruce, and they had this guy named Rick Bay, who was the AD. I didn't even know what the AD was. I'm like, AD? What is AD? The AD in my high school was my football coach. I didn't know what the AD actually did my freshman year. And Rick Bay said, I will not fire Earl Bruce. I'll quit first. And he quit. And we beat Michigan that year. And it was like, the only time I beat Michigan in the 5 years I was there was my freshman year. We had a hell of a games against them, but that was probably the most incredible game. I didn't even play in it, but I learned what integrity was. I mean, I really did. Like, wow, he kept his principle so bad, you're going to lose your job, let alone your life, your livelihood. He never got up. He never became AD again after that. So that's probably the game that I go. And Coach, we cried with Coach Bruce. I mean, he impacted my life in 8 months more than a lot of other people. I still take my hat off indoors now. I mean, we had rules that just, we had a standard, not necessarily rules, and just, you know, thank you, holding the door for ladies, and just all those things we learned, chivalry, all those things we learned, you know, they're still with me today.
That's interesting. That's the game that you chose. You know, initially people would think of the game, you know, I scored 3 touchdowns or something, but I appreciate that perspective because what it did for you long term, and then the role that you're in now, including the NFLPA. I didn't know everything like what you did at that. What was your role at the NFLPA?
Well, when I did internships every year because I knew football was going to end, and I said, you know what, I better figure out something I want to do because this thing is like a 1 year, you know, 6 month job. It's like being a temporary worker. And so I did internships with Merrill Lynch, Anheuser-Busch, and then I did an internship with the NFLPA with Gene Upshaw. God rest his soul. Another Hall of Famer, but I would say a teammate because I worked for him, just found a liking to me. I had a way of communicating with a Harvard grad and then somebody didn't graduate at all. And he knew he was getting older and I can communicate the same message he did in a different way and at different levels. And he just kind of liked me. And I still was playing in 97 and in 98, he brought me back again and he paid me. And then in 99, he hired me. And I worked for Gene, and I was the assistant to the executive director for 5 years. Then he made me a regional director, and then he passed. And that's when transition started. So I don't know if I'm fast-forwarding that too fast for you, but that's what I did. I disseminated information about the collective bargaining agreement and what they were going to get, what they weren't going to get. So working conditions, hours, and wages. So I went to all 32 NFL teams and went back to see my teammates, which was hilarious to go back. You know, go back to Minnesota was one of my teams, and my job was to educate those guys. But I knew I had to dress differently. I wore a suit now. I didn't hang around with them. So I had to separate myself. I was 29 years old conducting meetings about collective bargaining agreements. And my teammates were looking at me like, Scotty? I'm like, yeah. So, and then Gene passed. And then D. Smith came in. And D. Smith understood I built relationships. And he understood relationships with business. And he said, I'm going to move you. And I'm like, I don't want to move. I want to stay on this labor side. And he goes, no, I think you don't know how good you're going to be at this. So part of my job was procurement. So if there was outstanding items, I would call players up. Like I had players that had like $10,000 and they just need to sign cards. And I'd call them, so listen, what day you are? Like Tuesday. I'm like, all right, great. So I'll fly in, I'll meet you, take your dinner, sign these cards. And they're like, why don't I sign the cards? I'm like, because some little kid's going to be disappointed. So when D saw that, the guys would communicate with me, say, you're going to go out and build relationships. This is what you're going to do. And they switched me to the director of player engagement. And I did that for 5 years. And then 2014, goes back to relationships, Denny Green's agent and Tyron Williams' agent was also Marvin Lewis's agent, who we were rookies together. Marvin was a rookie with me in Pittsburgh. He was their agent. And he said, hey, man, you know, you told me you wanted to work for me one day. You want to work for me still? I said, sure. He goes, I'm going to Arizona State to be athletic director. Do you want to come? Athletic director. I'm like, yeah, I want to go. He said, well, finish all your work and I'll hire you in June. And this is March. And so I finished all my work and resigned and moved to Arizona. And my kids both went to Arizona State. My daughter went to U of A for a semester and she went to Arizona State. She wanted to be close to her brother and her mom. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was going to be one of the transitions was then you moved into Arizona State with that type of a role. And now you've been itching, I guess. I don't know. You get back on the field again as a coach. Like that's a unique background that you have. What made you want to jump back on the field again?
Well, coaching is teaching and teaching is coaching and it's relationship building. If I don't trust you, I'm not going to listen to you. If I don't trust you, I'm not going to respect you. I don't trust you. I'm not going to do what you tell me to do. And so to me, being able to build that relationship with young people and get them to trust you and then be able to tell them testimony to realize you're doing this is going to screw you up. You don't know what it is, but I'm going to try to help you. And I'm going to try to take a hard drive, put it in my neck, take it out and say it out of my mouth and put it in your neck, if that makes sense, and give you all information I have. You can get that in 36, 48 months. And that's kind of enticing to them when I'm able to communicate with them. And it does help, too, that my kids are 25 and 28. So talking to young people is something I've been doing for a while. And, you know, they're not perfect. They don't like to be yelled at. And I'm not a yeller. I kind of just look at them like this. When they do something they're not supposed to do. But, I mean, you know, coaching is teaching, and teaching is coaching. Some of your best – think about it. You didn't like biology, but Miss Rubenstein was amazing. And you learned it because she was a cool teacher. And – I just want to be the cool coach to go, you can learn this and you can do it. You have God-gifted talents, and my job is to make sure I bring it out of you. That's my job.
Where did that come from? I mean, as a kid or something, what was your inspiration that you had when you were a youngster?
It was just about learning. I mean, to me, lifelong learning. You want to be a lifelong learner. Once you stop learning, you might as well die. So to me, it was about learning and changing. You're constantly evolving, and I'm not patient at all. So I'm patient with people, but I'm not patient with situations I want. So I wanted to coach. So I did everything I could. Now, faith without works is just a wish. I put the work in to do it. I built some relationships through them along the way. And those relationships came forward and was able to say, hey, hire this guy. You know, somebody calls about you and they say, hire Scotty Graham. You're like, we haven't done it before. No, you hire Scotty Graham. He'll figure it out. So my life's been about figuring it out. And it's been about transition. So I get to tell people again, you know what? I was 50 years old and decided I was going to change careers. They're like, what? I told my wife, I was watching football. I said, I need to do this. I need to be part of this. I need to be part of this. This is 2 years ago. So we laugh now, you know, because my first game's coming up. We play BYU in a neutral site game in Las Vegas. So that's going to be exciting. I mean, really exciting. She'll be there to enjoy that with me. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be antsy at first because I can't play anymore. So I got to try to take what I know and communicate in a way that they understand.
Yeah, that's something that I haven't had that same experience, you know, playing for so long and then being a coach and that, like you said, that itch of getting on the field. But in other situations in my career, it's been, oh, I want to jump back in at that. So I can kind of relate to that situation. And you mentioned, now we're not going to say, we're going to go into the DeLorean again. We'll go to the forward, the end of the year. I'm not worried about the stats or the standings or anything like that, but you've had a successful year as a team. What are you telling your players at the end of the year? What kind of a, I don't know, end of year speech would it be?
It won't be a speech. I meet with my guys every Monday anyway, so they know.
Right. Well, like you said, it goes back to that communication, that relationships and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, my guys come in every Monday. We talk. We're going to do their goals next week. I told them, always text me their goals. We'll sit down and talk about their goals. Are they realistic? Are they dreams? So, I mean, being able to communicate with guys on those Mondays, I mean, when they come in my – this is my office, not my – this is my office, and then I have my classroom. If you come in here, we don't talk about football. We go down there, we talk about football. This is a place where it's safe. This is where I'm just like your uncle or big brother. You can come in and talk to me about anything because they have a lot to say. And, you know, you want to be in a position where you can communicate with them.
It's almost like that shirt that you're wearing right now kind of tells it all. You know, you good. And that's to me, you just have that feeling. And I've only known you for like 20 minutes now, but I get that feeling that so I could walk into your office and I could say, hey, man, I got this going on again. It's nothing to do with football, but that will translate on the field for me because of I know you got my back in every other realm. And I know we got to get you out of here so you can go have some sushi. With that last with that being said, do you have any
I got to take care of my wife. I mean, you know, we don't get off early very often. And by the way, I apologize for last week. I just, you know, got busy and it was like, oh, my God, 15 minutes late. Like, what do I do? And I'm like, all right, I got rescheduled. I hate being late. And I think I'm one of the hardest critics. I don't like losing. And my definition of losing is rock, paper, scissors. But I'm not a sore loser, though. That's the difference. I don't mind losing because I can get you tomorrow. I'm not a sore loser. If you lose, you're better than me that day. But that doesn't mean you're going to get me today. And not only that, if we went for 10 more minutes, I probably would beat you. So I'm good.
I'm with you there. Yeah, Lombardi. I never lost. I just ran out of time. And the whole, you know, I'm with you. You don't really lose. It's just as long as you're willing to learn from that and not make the same mistake again. And the whole, you know, don't make two mistakes 2 days in a row when you have a habit that you're breaking. I could go on and on about Tony Robbins quotes and all that junk too. Like you said, you're a quote dude. But last words of advice for the listener of the show regarding anything you want from your life as a gridiron great.
Continue to be yourself. Get a chance to know yourself. The hardest project you'll ever work on is you. Really get to be original and be yourself, because people know when you're not who you are. Just like you said, you picked up on it right away. And it's just, I like being me. I like people going, you are real. You're not throwing any curves. And care about people, because you never know what people are going through. You never know. Yeah, you might be having the worst day of your life and you just need somebody to go, you'll be all right. And then be a ferocious listener. Hear exactly what people are asking you. A lot of times people don't want anything from you. They just want you to, they want to be heard. So you listen. I'm a ferocious listener. I love listening to people. And I generally don't give advice unless it's bad. Like if you do something crazy, I'm like, hey, man, don't do that. Don't do that. But if you ask me a question, right or left, I'm like, maybe down the middle. I wouldn't want to tell you what to do, because if it doesn't work out the way you want to, you're going to blame it on me. So I don't do that. I appreciate you reaching out. I really do. And for your listeners, just continue to be yourself. Hardest project you can work on is yourself. And like I said, this new thing out right now is pressure. Well, if you don't want the pressure, don't choose the occupation, because pressure is something that you don't have to buy into. Blake Stauffer told me, a wrestler that I met, he said, I deserve this pressure, because a couple of teammates were like, I'm stressed, I'm worried. And he's like, for what? This is what you're supposed to do. Michael Jordan's nervous. Michael Jordan will tell you all the time, I miss more shots than anybody else, but I made more too. So shooters gonna shoot. So take your shot and do anything you want to do. If people say you can't do anything, use me as an example. 50 years old, said I'm going to do something different. And my first job was a Power 5 job, one of the best staffs in the world, and one of the tremendous leaders being Coach Fish. So I'm beyond elated. Yeah, just be you. And don't put your conscience on other people.
There you go. Just be you. And speaking of just being you, does that include having a passion for sports history? And maybe you're interested in starting your own podcast, or you already have one and you're just looking for ways to continue to grow it? I'll tell you what. We at the Sports History Network are interested in working with passionate historians, and we'd love to help you start your own podcast, or if you already have one, help you come on over and grow it. Now, if you're interested, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/join. Now, next week, we bring on another former NFL player. Mark Pattison played in the league for a total of 5 years, started multiple multi-million dollar companies, is a VP at Sports Illustrated, and recently accomplished a feat that only about 500 people in the world have ever done. It all revolves around something called 7 Summits. So come back in 2 weeks and check this story out. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Football History Dude. Make sure you're the first to get the next episode. Please subscribe on your podcast player of choice and head on over to thefootballhistorydude.com for the show notes and more information on the history of the NFL. And remember, dudes, where we're going, we don't need roads.
At the Sports History Network, we're all about sports yesteryear, and so we're so pleased to introduce you to Row One, an online memorabilia gallery and shop that brings your sports history to life anywhere. The Row One gallery includes over 5,200 gorgeously reproduced prints of team posters, game program covers, game tickets, advertisements, and more in baseball, pro and college football, pro and college basketball, and more. And any gallery item may be printed in a variety of sizes on wood, metal, canvas, acrylic, or poster paper. And in Row One shop, check out the thousands more of unique items with the retro and historical designs dating back to 1876, including t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, phone cases, mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com, ROW1, for access to the full Row One catalog and for gallery prints and gift items. Plus get a 15% discount off all prints on the Row One Pictorum Gallery with coupon code SHN15. Follow the link on the show notes.